I am fantasy author L. Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes at an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, July 27th, 2019, and this is episode 24 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So, I am once again on the road. I am in New York City, in Times Square, at the Romance Writers of America National Conference. And so, tune in next week for our regularly scheduled microphone and regular audio quality. And I decided to record this podcast before karaoke instead of afterwards, unlike the last conference. So, you won't have to hear me croak through the whole thing, hopefully. My voice is not... Oops. If I hit the microphone, I'm sorry. My voice is not terrible yet. Although I do feel like I've been run over by a truck several times. So it's Saturday, I've been here since Tuesday. It's a long time for me, going home tomorrow. But yes, so this week's best thing is the RWA conference that I am at now. The first time I came to this conference, it was in New York. It's in New York every 4 years, because that is the hub of the publishing industry. And I didn't go the year after, because then it goes to the West Coast, someplace in California usually. And then I've been the last 2 years, so I've been to a total of Orlando, Denver, New York, so forth. And it is, so RWA, I'm not a big organization person. I'm not a joiner of things. I think it's my anarchist history and leanings. I don't like groups of, I don't dislike groups, but I don't like groups, really. I like small groups of like-minded people that I vet and choose to be a part of. And so yeah, but joining RWA was a really good decision for me. I made the decision in 2014 after going to my second VONA workshop. And so I spent a week with Marjorie M. Liu, and she was my teacher there. And so she's a paranormal romance author. She does the graphic novel, and I can't remember the name of it. I will put it in the show notes and it will come to me. It's fabulous. And so she's just a great writer. And so she was talking about RWA in the workshop. And so I came home from the workshop, and I think the next month, or maybe it took me 2 months to actually build up, you know, being an introvert, you have to really prepare myself mentally to go into new spaces with new people. But within the next couple of months, I went to my first local chapter RWA meeting. And I was really amazed. You know, at the beginning of the meetings, in the Maryland chapter at least, they always start with, you know, you introduce yourselves, and then there's like a list of things. And if this applies to you, you raise your hand. So the first thing was like, has anyone published a book this month? Has anyone hit a list this month? Has anyone sold rights? Has anyone gotten an agent? And people would raise their hands, and everyone would clap. And so you're sitting in this room with these like normal, average, middle-aged women who just, you know, they're not superstars, they don't look like superstars, but some of them actually are superstars, and at least in the publishing industry. So it was really inspiring, and it helped me to believe, you know, that, okay, this is actually something I can do. I here can do this, I can access these things, there's a wealth of information around me. And so I ended up joining. And now I'm pretty active. I've been active in my local chapter. I do the website, and which puts me on the board after a fashion. And I teach a lot of workshops and, you know, try to mentor people and give back, because I felt like I've gotten a lot from the organization. So the National Conference is a place to meet up with people that I only get to see once a year and connect with friends and meet new people. And that's really the best thing about it. It's earlier in my career, I think the panels were way more important. Now it's harder for me to go to panels that I'm not actually on. It's not hard, but there's, you know, as you progress, I think there's fewer intermediate advanced level panels in conferences in general. Some conferences have different tracks for that, but sometimes I go to stuff and it's stuff that I already know. I mean, usually you can glean something out of it, but it can be a lot when you're as tired as these things make you. So I have been to some good panels. I've been on some good panels this conference. And so the first one that I was on was a podcasting panel. And it featured podcasters from various romance-related podcasts. And I was one of the newbies of the group, but it was really great to share my experience as kind of just a solo podcaster who is not highly produced. I don't have a producer. I'm just doing it myself. And an author perspective, if an author wants to start their own podcast, I can tell you how to do that. So that was good. The next one I was on was on STEM in romance, more than lipsticks and lab coats. And so there was a chemist, a biologist, a nurse, and me who does, if you are new to the podcast, I'm a website developer. And so talking about just how we got into those industries, our pet peeves when people are writing characters in STEM and some of the shortcuts that they take and then ways to do it right. So I thought that was really great. And we had a good crowd and we had good questions and a good conversation. The last panel I was on was Whose Story Is It? Writing Diversely in Romance. And it was another great panel. I was actually moderating. So I was coming up with the questions and trying to lead the discussion in a way that people might not have heard before in other diversity discussions. So I was really interested in having a conversation that was different. And I think that we achieved that. I got good feedback afterwards about people saying that they really liked the panel and the discussions. And so I feel good about that. I think the highlight was last night was the Ritas, and I've talked about the Rita Awards in romance on this podcast before, and how no Black woman had ever won a Rita Award, the highest award in romance. And so last night, two Black women did win, the two that were nominated, Kennedy Ryan and M. Malone. And it felt like a big win, I think, for everyone who had been agitating and fighting and bringing attention to this issue and trying to find ways to make the award more inclusive and really representative of the talent in romance and the people who deserve to be recognized, you know? And even all of the other winners, you know, made mention of that this award, that this industry needs to be more inclusive and the award means more when it's fairer. And so there are changes being made to all aspects of the awards and the organization. So I think it was a step in the right direction. And I was very excited to celebrate with the winners and to see that change happen. And just the validation for all of the people who have been fighting so hard for this and talking so much about it and trying to just make sense of the insensible, you know, try to bring change to, and it's always difficult. And so, especially in the diversity panel that I moderated, it's really interesting because, you know, there aren't any clear-cut solutions to these problems. We know that. There are well-meaning people who are trying to put forth solutions, but there's going to be a lot of disagreement about the way forward and how best to achieve it and what's going to work. And I don't know that anyone knows what's going to work if the end goal is more equitable representation, you know, more equitable opportunities in publishing. So the diversity panel discussion was really good because you're showing all the sides of it. Like, for example, a lot of recently, like if you've ever heard talks about diversity or people always say, oh, get a sensitivity reader, so that if you're writing outside of your experience or outside of your group that you identify with, then find a member or two or however many of that group to read your book and give their opinion on it. And then there's talk, you know, pay the sensitivity readers, don't ask people for free labor. But one of the members of the panel, Quanah Jackson, who started the hashtag We Need Diverse Romance, was saying that she doesn't like sensitivity readers, that it can give a pass. So people will be like, oh, I had a sensitivity reader read it, you know, so it's fine. And, you know, one or even three or five or 10, you know, however many people that you have read it, they're not representative of the entire race or subgroup or marginalized group or whatever. So it can also be problematic. And so I felt the audience kind of being like, well, what do we do? You know, like, what do we do? And so then one woman in the audience had a comment, which was basically just like, don't write the stories. You know, if you don't have friends that are diverse or that are a part of that group, if you haven't cultivated relationships with people who are not like yourself, then maybe you don't need to write those stories. And I think that there's no win, you know? If you are, I can imagine being a white author in the room and, you know, kind of hearing this discussion and wondering what to do. You know, people are saying, oh, well, the world isn't all white, so why are all these stories all white? You know, and then if they have the desire to put a person of color or an LGBT person or a disabled person or some marginalized group in their story, and then they were like, oh, the collective they at one point was like, well, I have a sensitivity reader. And then some people are like, don't have a sensitivity reader. And it's confusing for everyone. Like, a black author who is a sensitivity reader asked a question, you know, about that, saying that this is how she had responded to white authors asking her for input. She was like, well, here's my rate. I'll be a sensitivity reader for you, but, you know, I'm just one person and I don't represent everyone. So, I mean, just in short, there's no one way that is going to be okay, that is going to absolve you of any problems that may occur in your book. And it's not just white authors. I mean, even if you are a member of a marginalized group, no group is monolithic. So your perspective is going to be different and is going to make somebody upset. You know, there's black authors who get told that their black characters aren't black enough. And so there's no way to win. And I don't know. I mean, that's just life. That's life. It's complicated. Everything is complicated. And so do we say now to people, only write what you know, which I completely disagree with. Like, I don't think, you know, if fiction authors only write what you know, then you're writing memoir, you know? And then the other thing is, oh, well, you should have friends who are more diverse. Well, ideally, yeah, of course. But are now people just scrambling to make friends with disabled people and people of color? And as a black woman, you know, if I feel like white people are like, start inviting me to stuff and try to befriend me because they realize they don't have any black friends, I don't necessarily want to be your black friend if it's not a natural organic thing that is like, oh, you looked around and decided you didn't have any. So these are just my rambling thoughts as I digest kind of what was being said and what was going on. Because I don't think that people should only write their group. And I do think that people should take extreme care when writing, especially marginalized groups that they don't belong to. And that is kind of the end of it. Like, sensitivity readers are probably better than nothing at the end of the day, if it's something that you really are completely unfamiliar with. But it's not going to be, that's the end of the story. Like, I got a sensitivity reader and I'm good, that's it. I will never offend anyone, because what offends one person doesn't offend someone else. You know, I would be a terrible sensitivity reader because I don't get offended very easily. I've had people ask me, oh, is this offensive? Is this racist? And I'm like, what do you think? You know, like, I'm me and I have my reactions to things, and another person will react differently, as is their right. And so I think we just all have to stand by what we do. Specifically, writing-wise, I think that if you're deep into a character and you can justify what that character does based on their backstory and their characteristics and their wound and, you know, all of the character development, that is one of the things. So if someone reads it and is like, well, I don't think a black person or a disabled person would act like that, and you can, if you decide to defend it, it could be like, well, this specific person with this specific background could act in these specific ways. And at the heart of it, you know, when we're writing characters who are doing things, I think that is the only answer that I have come up with. But it's always going to be fraught. You cannot please everyone. And it's just, no one's ever going to be completely happy with anything. And I think the sooner writers accept that, and the sooner everyone accepts that about whatever you're doing, whatever you're putting out there, the better. Sometimes when you see a problem and someone identifies the problem And people rush to try to find solutions really quickly. And problems this complex and this deep-seated and this, it has roots that go out far and deep and long. And it's really, really difficult. So do we need to give white writers permission not to write diversely? You know, that's kind of what I came away with. Like, just something about the write what you know. Write only the experiences that you are intimately familiar with. It feels very wrong to me. But I've seen it when people try and it goes wrong, it's even worse. So I don't have any answers either, but I recognize that there are no answers and that anyone who thinks they have an answer is probably wrong. And these are complex questions, so write with heart, write with passion. If you have a passion to tell a story, that's going to come through. And I think that's the authenticity that's going to drive you to being respectful, to finding a way in that you feel comfortable with, that serves the story that you're trying to tell. Pandering, which we also talked about on the panel, is when you're doing it because someone told you that you should and you're not passionate about it. And that should always be avoided. So maybe that's it. Maybe it's just like, you know, if you have a passion to tell a story, then that's going to invigorate you. And that is going to shine through in a way. Whereas if you are just trying to tick off boxes and make yourself look like a good person or make yourself feel like a good person, it's not good enough, you know? So a lot of things come back to your why. Why are you telling the story? Why are you writing in the first place? What do you hope to get out of it? If you're writing so that other people can think that you're a good human, that will show, and that is very superficial. If you're including characters so that other people think that you're an enlightened person, go deeper, you know? So my 2 cents on the subject. But overall, it has been a good conference, almost entirely because of the people that I've gotten to talk to and the people that I know, meeting new people. It has been great, and I do feel invigorated at the same time that I can barely keep my eyes open at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I wasn't even out that late. Well, I was up late talking, actually, so let me amend that. Writing news. I can't write at a conference. I think we've gone over this before, if you're a listener, if you've listened before. I have brainstormed, and I'm going to try to do some more brainstorming today because I decided I wasn't going to any panels today. There is a signing in this afternoon that I am going to go to, but I think that I looked at the schedule. There's some stuff that I wanted to go to, but we can buy the recordings, and I will listen to the recordings. I'm dragging myself down there to do this. I couldn't. So I'm going to try to at least look at my manuscript and think about it. And I did bring my Alpha Smart. I did spend some time earlier in the week brainstorming through some of the problems that I'm having with it. But I can't write at a conference. And every conference I go to, I know I'm going to try, and I'm going to keep trying, because one day I'm going to be able to do it. In my mind. But I'm making my peace with it. I will regroup next week with a new schedule. And one of the panels I did go to yesterday, which was by the author Ronnie Lauren, who was fantastic, and we share an agent. And hers was on writing slowly, an artisanal approach to your writing career, because there's so much pressure, especially in the indie world. But I think maybe going into traditional publishing too, to write fast and publish 4, 5, 6, 12, 15 books a year. And not everybody can do that. And sometimes people will make themselves crazy trying to do that. I remember my first year publishing, 2015, I published 4 books, and I wrote an end of the year blog post. I think it's all on the blog if you care to dive into the archives, where I was like, next year I'm going to write 6 books. 6 books. Next year I wrote 0 books because reasons. The year after that, like another 0 books. We won't even go into it, but 6 books has not been a thing, and I don't see it being a thing anytime soon. But we can hold out hope. My point was, she brought out something that I need to remember, which I had known, but I needed a reminder, which I'm grateful that I got, is that you have to schedule thinking time as writing time. And we get a lot really caught up with word count, and you know, I want to do a chapter a day, I want to do 3,000 words a day. But, and especially when you get stuck, thinking time is absolutely valid for your writing time. So if I set aside 3 hours a day to work on my book, if I just think about it that whole time, I should feel accomplished. And because I'm at the point now when, because I got stuck, I need to rethink it and redo something, approach it from another angle. And so the thinking time is going to be key. So I need to step back from my stress and disappointment about not hitting word count goals in terms of this first draft, which is a fast draft, and just go back to the drawing board a little bit. Because one of the benefits she pointed out about the artisanal approach is that you can go deeper. And I do know that my first outline is the first level. Like, I do some brainstorming and I try to go deeper. And by that, I just mean that your first idea is going to be the most cliched idea. Like, the first way to solve the problem that the character has, the first thing you think of is the same thing everybody else would think of. So I think Sean Coyne, the editor, says, brainstorm a list of 10, and that's a great idea. So if you have, you know, every obstacle that the character encounters, the first 5 things on your list are probably going to be things you've read before, things you've heard before, cliches. It's when you dig deeper into the things that only you can bring to that story and that character is when you find the gold. And so the first outline, I think, is full of maybe the first 5 ideas in the brainstorm, and they're still, and that's why that doesn't feel right, you know, like it's still surface level. I haven't gone deeper into that uniqueness and that stuff that's like deep in the soil that only I can bring out of the story. And so I have to go back and do that. And sometimes that happens in a second draft. With this book, this first draft, and I don't want to say this because I have a standing order to my mastermind group that says, if I stop fast drafting and try to do a detailed first draft, please stop me, because it is a mistake. Because I have tried it several times and it has always been a mistake. And I want to try it again, and I feel like it will still be a mistake. Okay. I will be brainstorming and coming back fresh next week. We'll see how long it takes me to recover from this conference. I don't have any more travel planned until September. And work has been very nice. Everyone's been leaving me alone, thank goodness. So we'll see if that continues next week. So that is my update for writing. It's not very much to update, but that is the plan. Think more. Just use the brain. Think, brainstorm, scribble, moodle, whatever you want to call it. That's what I need. And hopefully I'll be inspired after this. I think I will be, after I recover and my body recovers and my feet, which are so tired and sore. Yeah. I felt positive though. I felt good. I had good meetings. I met with my editor and I met with my TV and film agent, and in addition to all of the authors that I ran into and got a chance to talk to and hang out with. And so I've had a great week, and I do feel energized in between the exhaustion. Karaoke is tonight. I'm very excited about that. Yes. That is it for me for this week. I will talk to you next week. In the meantime, happy reading. For episode show notes and to learn more about me and my books, go to lpenelope.com. Subscribe to My Imaginary Friends wherever you get your podcasts, and check out the video episodes on YouTube. Please leave a rating and review to help support the show.